up call.
This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right. Hour three rolling along this morning in the breaking news. PGA Tour, LIV, and the DP World Tour, the European Tour, have now all come together and have merged. What does it mean? We're getting all the details as it's pouring in on this merger. I said last year I thought the LIV PGA Tour breakup was one of the biggest stories in sports. We normally do not see a large sports entity break up into something else. We don't see the NBA turn into two leagues. We don't see Major League Baseball turn into two leagues. The NFL didn't break away, didn't have five teams decide to go break away and form another professional football league. But we saw the PGA Tour do it. And when LIV first came around, it was roundly criticized for the Saudi backing, but it also appeared a little silly. I mean, it was logos that weren't all that great, and then, you know, these tournaments with rock and roll music and 54 holes, and everybody's playing a shotgun like you would at a charity golf event. Like, it's like, what is this? Is this real golf? Well, it was golf the way they wanted it, and said, look, you know what? The only reason that you're saying we're different and wacky is because the PGA Tour set up the way a golf tournament should be run. Everybody's got to be quiet. Everything's got to be on a higher class level. And all the golfers have to wear pants. And we all go off on the first tee. Sometimes we split the tees, you know, on a Thursday. But for the most part, it's definitely not a shotgun start. They were like, we're going to do it our way. We're going to do it this way. And have at it. And the money was the number one way reason people went. Harold Varner said it best. He was a LIV golfer that said he was sick and tired of hearing from all the LIV golfers that they wanted to grow the game and they wanted to do things differently. He's like, you're all getting paid nine figures to do this. Let's just say what it is. And he said it. He goes, listen, I love the PGA Tour, but I'm joining LIV to create generational wealth. That's basically it. So now the guys on LIV are getting generational wealth, and they've merged with the PGA Tour and the European Tour, and we'll find out exactly what that means. But it could mean a couple of things that are kind of big. One, players on the LIV Golf Tour now have opportunities to make majors on different merits than utilizing their current status to try to keep going to the Masters by finishing in the top 10. They can actually go win something, get an invite again. They can earn world points to earn invites to the major championships. I think this brings in, this may not sound like a huge deal, but to me it's a big deal. I think it brings Phil Mickelson back in play as a Ryder Cup captain. The Ryder Cup is going to be at Bethpage when it comes back to the United States. It's going to be on Long Island in New York.
Completely forgot about that. That's right.
Bethpage is red hot for Mickelson. They love Mickelson. They have loved Mickelson. People said if there's one place that he should be captain of the Ryder Cup, it's at Bethpage
in
New York.
Who was in the running for it?
There
was somebody that I remember we were talking about somebody else. Didn't they mention a name that's like, oh, he could be the Ryder Cup captain because Phil Mickelson is the villain?
Oh, yeah.
The names escaped me. He's got to be so disappointed.
Right, exactly.
I mean, because, you know, like you said all along, I mean, you've been saying this for 3-4 years now, that this is Phil's captaincy.
This is Phil's captaincy. And Zach Johnson, I think, is running Team USA now, the one that's going to Europe this fall to play. So when it comes back to Bethpage, Phil Mickelson's in the running for captaincy again. But it also means Phil Mickelson had to put up with 2 years of spite.
Yes.
And hate. And he won. He won.
And he became
battle.
The perfect looking villain too.
Right.
Wearing
right.
all black, a little disheveled, you know, a little 5 o'clock shadow, a dark 5 o'clock shadow. I was loving that.
Lost all that weight.
Phil.
Was
yeah.
looking thin. Right. Looking in shape. And he battled this out. He took the arrows. He took all the criticism.
Guaranteed, whatever diet he's been on, he's off of it today.
Absolutely, right? Now, Amy, let's go get a steak.
Yep.
You know, I'll take a steak, a baked potato, and that blooming onion, whatever that thing is.
Yep.
Douse that thing in aioli sauce. I'm good to go.
And then your finest scotch, please.
Yep, yeah, exactly. But I mean, there was some hard feelings with this. I mean, there was some people.
There was some hatred.
There was some hatred. I mean, there was a lot of back and forth that was the negative. I mean, it was There was a lot.
And you're going to hear a lot of these narratives today because I'm seeing it all across Twitter, especially coming from Jay Monahan, that, you know, all the main reason not to like Liv was because it's Saudi backed. And I don't know how you fall back on that, you know, where it was like, you know, Jay Monahan is saying he's sticking up for America and, you know, sticking up for 9/11. And that's why you can't back the Saudi Arabian League. And now you're going to you're getting a partnership with them.
Yeah.
It's like, how do you fall back? I mean, it's a really bad look for a lot of PGA players or PGA Tour members.
Well, I'm kind of interested in what Rory McIlroy thinks of all this.
Yeah.
There's one guy who was on the soapbox of anti-Liv feeling.
All right. Let's back it up a little bit because didn't Rory meet up with
Jack Nicklaus?
No. Greg
Norman.
Greg Norman. Did he meet up with Greg Norman? Didn't they bury the hatchet somehow?
I don't know. Maybe they did.
I thought they did like a couple, like a week ago or 2 weeks ago. But so was that like the first inkling?
Oh, there might have been something about that because there were some personal statements made.
Yeah.
You know, and they probably hammered that out. But for the most part, it's been just sticking up for my side. You know what I mean? Like I'm on this side, you're on that side, and making those.
Because I know Rory's been kind of easing off of the hatred.
Yeah. He was getting a little tired of being the spokesperson for it every tournament. You know, every tournament, people wanted more and more quotes about your anti-Liv statement, and I think he was just getting to a point where he's like, you know what, I'm saying the same thing every week. You know, I support us, I don't support them, you know, what do you want? But, man, this is huge. I mean, this is really big. This is really big. I mean, Mickelson could end up being the big winner in all this. He could win. He could be the guy that, you know what, you got to make an omelet. You got to break eggs. And I broke eggs and people didn't like it. But in the end, I got what I wanted. His goal was to affect the tour, to change the tour. And he did just that. He did. I'll have to talk. Well, tomorrow we might have to talk to somebody who's more in the know on this than me, because maybe they see it differently. Maybe like, well, Phil didn't actually win, but.
No, I don't think you can. In what way did Liv not win?
Right.
Any member on Liv?
I don't know how the PGA Tour won.
Right.
Like, I want to know how the PGA Tour won. Like, is the new business model beneficiary to them? Where they?
Well, they're going for, I guess, the beneficiary because they were a non-profit organization. Now they're going to be a profit organization. It's like, okay, how were you guys non-profit in the first place?
Yeah, I mean, look, it wasn't like ticket sales were down. The tournaments were
no,
packed.
And Liv is getting everything that they need right now. They need fans, they need attendance, they need TV rights, and they're going to be getting all that with this merger. And that's what they needed. Everything else, they were fine with.
And I hate to say this because I mean these guys are all good golfers, but Tiger Woods is the only one that moved the needle in terms of big rating numbers. Like people watch golf to watch golf, right? So the PGA Tour, if they had a tournament that didn't have Rory in it, it was like, well, our audience was. What it is, because people like, they just have it on. Tiger was the one that people tuned in to see Tiger. But, so it's not like they, like Brooks Koepka didn't move the needle, or Dustin Johnson didn't move the needle. Phil maybe a little bit, but he's 52 years old. But, so how did the PGA Tour win? That's what I'm kind of curious. Because Liv now has validity. That's the big thing out of this.
Yep.
Is that Liv now has validity. They formed on their own, and they did their own thing for a bit, and they were so much of a threat that the two big golf tours said, "All right, we'll invite you in."
I mean, it's just fine. I'm sure your timeline is looking like my timeline. It's just one piece of tidbit after another, I mean, just reading one right here, which was the PGA Tour convincing all the players not to take money from Liv.
Right.
And now the PGA is going to be taking money from Liv.
Yeah. No doubt. The threats that they had.
Yeah.
Which, again, hindsight's 20/20. I get it. So at the time, you're like, well, there, you'll never play over here.
I got to be here for the heritage.
You're right. Think about some of those golfers that could have gotten $100 million.
Yeah.
And they
just by signing a piece of paper and agreeing to play tournaments.
I don't want to lose my professional, because the threat was like this. It's like, all right, if you go to Liv and that thing folds, you won't be on this tour. And these young guys are like, you mean I won't be a professional golfer, a touring professional golfer? Nope. So they were like, hedging their bet that Liv would be around for a long time. It wasn't the money. It would be like, okay, $100 million is enough, but they would be like, what do I do at 26?
Yeah.
Like, I want to play in tournaments. Like, this is what I've been doing my whole life. When I'm a kid and I'm practicing for 6 hours and I'm going to these junior tournaments and my parents are sacrificing, we all didn't say, in one day I'll sign a piece of paper for $100 million and I'll just stop. Right? The goal was, that would be my job. That would be what I could build a legacy. I'm winning golf tournaments, playing in golf tournaments, showing up at golf tournaments, being a competitive golfer on the tour. It wasn't to one day sign a contract and then go, well, that's it. I guess I'm out. So these guys were saying, so I may be rich, but I also may not be doing the thing that I wanted to do my whole life. And the PGA Tour was like, yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah, you can go play around with your $100 million, have fun with that, but if that thing folds and you got to fight to get your money, you ain't making any money over here. And now think about all those guys that can turn right back at the PGA Tour and go, yeah, thanks for that.
Yeah, thanks
you couldn't
for
even hold it. You couldn't even hold off for 4 years, 5 years? The second year this thing is in existence?
I just saw...
Like, not even halfway through their schedule, and you've already capitulated and formed a bond with them? What's wrong with you?
There was a graphic that just flashed on the Golf Channel. Right, and it's showing a list of things that, you know, what this merger means. The very bottom one, that after the 2023 season, all players can reapply for the PGA Tour membership.
See,
card.
Exactly. You told me Dustin Johnson would never be on this tour again. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, just say, you sat out a couple of years, now you can reapply. No right. Harm, no foul.
No harm, no foul. Nate Kreckman, Altitude Sports in Denver, is going to join us to talk a little Nuggets. Also, little news about the CU Buffaloes, Arizona Wildcats possibly leaving the Pac-12. We'll talk to him about that coming up at the bottom of the hour. With the...
Listening to Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us. We continue. Nate Kreckman again, Altitude Sports on the Nuggets as they hit the Game 3. We're still buzzing about the LIV Golf Tour and the PGA Tour and the European Tour merging. And you know what? You're right, Ron. The Twitter is blowing up with the same sentiment of how dare the PGA Tour preach loyalty?
Yep.
How dare they tell players, young players, that going to the LIV Tour was blood money and all of those things, to then just turn around less than, you know, about a year later and say, yeah, we're merging with this league now.
Yep.
By the way, that...
They made us an offer we can't refuse.
Exactly. I mean, that's nuts, man. That is nuts. That would be, again, if two NBA teams, three NBA teams formed another league, and they said, you know what, we're out of the NBA, we're going to form our own league, and we're going to add a bunch of these other markets. And then the NBA just went, oh, all right, you all can play. You all can come back. We'll all come together. It's like, you're not even giving it a chance to see where it's going to go. There were reports that the Saudis didn't want to hemorrhage that kind of money, wanted to put the money in something else. But I think it was that lawsuit, man. I think that lawsuit scared the PGA Tour and said, you know what, we're probably going to lose this. And let's go check it. I don't know. But it's kind of wild. But does this mean Greg Norman is the winner?
I'm just reading an article that's like, you know, one of those what we know now type of thing that's coming from Fox Sports, and it's I guess Jay Monahan said in a memo to players that a thorough evaluation would determine how to integrate team golf into the game.
Yeah.
So they're bringing it in.
What if you're a player and you're like, I'm not interested in that. So does that mean I have to, if I'm going to play at the Byron Nelson, I have to be on a team? Like, what if I'm just like, that's not what I'm into. I just want to play. I want to do my own thing and leave. I don't want to be part of something. I don't want to wear uniforms. I don't want to do any of that stuff.
All right. Here's the craziest statement. Monahan said that this decision came together over the last 7 weeks.
Oh, stop. Are you kidding me?
7 weeks. And there was not one little utterance of this.
Yeah, don't get me wrong. I don't think this happened overnight, but somehow, some way, they kept a 2 month thing quiet.
That's impossible.
I mean, they kept it to
impossible.
Their own players. Their own players, who are all tweeting today, how blown, shocked, and aghast at this. Like, seriously,
I mean, was it just one-on-one conversation? There was no other people involved. It was just, was it just the guy in charge of PIF and Jay Monahan? That's the only two that met? Or maybe the guy of the European Tour?
Yeah,
just the three of them met in a dark cave?
Right? I
mean, a la Aaron Rodgers?
What is this? Seriously.
I don't know about that 7 weeks. But yeah, I mean, it is just funny how, like, you're right, no one knew.
They're all these PGA Tour players are tweeting their shock and surprise at this merger.
And then you have all the analysts going, pointing out the, I guess, all the bad things.
Maybe Jack Nicklaus, that's what he wanted to talk to Rory about at the memorial this weekend.
Maybe.
Like, hey, Rory, come over here for a second.
Heard something.
Hey, I've been hearing that Liv and PGA Tour are merging together. You might want to keep it down. Goodness.
Scott Van Pelt,
the craziest story. I mean, this is one
Scott
of the craziest
Van Pelt
stories.
Literally just tweeted out what you just said.
Which was?
I mean, I think he was listening and he just took your words.
Oh, thanks.
He says, so you preach loyalty to a tour and convince guys not to take 8- and 9-figure deals based in part. Then those guys find out on Twitter you took the very same money.
Yep. It's very true. Yeah.
I love this. I love this time of year. This is when we always get crazy, Tony.
I wonder if Greg Norman is like, you know, I got an idea. Now that we're all together, we've all merged. Why don't we call it the Live Tour? And they go, why don't we just call it the Live Tour? How about that?
Yeah.
Might as well complete my domination. Since you're going to do all the things that we do anyway, why don't we just call this Live? Welcome to the Saudi Arabian money train. Here we go. Goodness. Yeah, if you're a golfer that got convinced that going to Live was somehow some immoral act, like taking that money, well, you got a problem with your soul, son. Well, yeah, they have every right to be angry. They have every right to be furious at the way this tour handled this breakup. They handled it 100% the wrong way. I mean, again, this to me sounds like a lawyer coming in and going, you're not winning, so you better figure out another plan because you ain't winning this lawsuit. We've gone over everything.
Can't
beat
them,
every
join them.
Document. I've checked everything that they've alleged, and I can't find other evidence. You're going to lose this in court, so you better sit down and talk to them. My God. So anyway, we're getting more and more information as this is popping up. But tomorrow we will try to find somebody to help us break this all down. We've got a couple of good golf people that we rely heavily on with this whole thing. And like I said, I thought it was the big story of 2022, this breakup. Because you know why? Because teams winning championships, that happens all the time, right? Coaches getting fired happens all the time. There are things in sports that happen every year. You can count on it. But when does a big entity break up? When does a big entity become two things? When do we have infighting in a league where the league goes, and we're going to go do our own thing over there? You know, it's like, imagine if go back to the NBA example. Imagine if a couple teams split and said, here's what we're going to do. We're going to create a 5-point line, and we're going to create a trapezoid lane like the international game, and we're going to have 15-minute quarters, or we're going to have 8-minute quarters, but then we're also going to have a opportunity where if you steal the ball in the backcourt, it gets an extra point. Like, we're going to change the rules, and we're going to do a 36-second clock. And then the NBA went, all right, we'll merge with you and we'll just take all of your stuff. Like that's what it feels like today. It just feels like, and again, I don't know the details. Those details are coming.
Yeah.
But since this broke about an hour ago, I have not seen anything that says the PGA will do X, Y, and Z to keep the PGA Tour what it was still in the picture.
What about all the protests? You remember when the Liv first came to America, it was in Portland or Chicago, and there were protests.
Yeah.
I mean,
you had 9/11 families going, you guys are playing for blood money.
And it's gone.
And the PGA Tour was like, they are. Yeah. We see you protesters. Yeah. It's a shame, isn't it? It's a shame. And then voila, here we are a year later. I mean, that thing launched about a year ago, right? I mean, it was around the US Open, about a year. It was like they were toying with the tour, and then they finally had their event. And I remember it was like the U.S. Open in Brookline last year. It was kind of like, remember Cameron Smith was like, do I join Liv or not after he won the British Open? So it's only been around basically one calendar year. And they got you over the barrels that much? They have that much on you that you're agreeing to this?
The more and more I think about it, it's looking more and more like the PGA just had no choice.
Yeah.
Like they had, there was no other avenue for them to go down unless it was just, I don't know, maybe if they're starting to pay out more money to kind of compete with LIV, because LIV was competing all this money. This is the outside investor.
Couldn't survive this? Like the PGA Tour couldn't survive. Like the PGA Tour could look down the road and go, you know what? Look, right now we're all a little nervous about what this means. They've got these stars, etc. But if I'm looking at my crystal ball and I'm looking down the road 10 years from now, what am I more likely to see 10 years from now? A Saudi-backed league that has no television ratings whatsoever, a bunch of older golfers that are going to start disappearing from the global scene, and that being the best thing to join for a young up-and-coming golf superstar, or my tour, which is increasing purses, creating designated events, world golf rankings, trips to major championships, a reduced commitment schedule, major television networks. What's more likely to be around 10 years from now? Right? And in that analysis, they couldn't say, let's just survive it. Let's just survive it. Oh, yeah, Dustin Johnson might win a U.S. Open or whatever. But you know what? We'll survive it. 10 years from now, they ain't going to be around. 10 years from now, they're not going to be around. And if they are around, no one's going to want to join it. Because we're going to have huge payouts. The money is going to just keep increasing. The prestige is going to be there. The history is going to be here. Like the majors are going to be here. They couldn't see it. So that tells me something really went wrong with this whole thing. It was really, really bad. It just doesn't make sense other than you got caught with something that you do not want in court. And when you, it's kind of like, remember when the owners was like, don't open the books. Whatever you do, don't open the books. Remember baseball? They're like, we're not opening the books.
Yes.
Right? Is that what it's going to be? Like in court, the PGA Tour was going to have to admit maybe they weren't as nonprofit as people thought they were. And they were like, you know what? We're now going to, we'll see. All right, Nate Kreckman, Altitude Sports, is going to join us to talk about the Nuggets. Did Miami find something in their Game 2 victory that worries Denver, or should Denver not be worried at all?
This is Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, looking to connect with Nate Kreckman, Altitude Radio out in Denver on the Nuggets and their mindset going into Game 3. I got two thoughts on this. I mean, two thoughts. One, you could be, all right, maybe there's something that Miami has now in their arsenal against this Nuggets team. Or you can look at it that Miami played a very, very good game. They were trailing by 15, overcame that 15-point deficit. And one by three, Jamal Murray knocks down that three. That goes into overtime. I always like the home team in an overtime situation. So maybe the Nuggets aren't down. You know, maybe their Nuggets are up 2-0, or maybe there is something to be concerned about in this series. It's depending on how you look at it and how you kind of see Game 2. We always know these are about adjustments. Spoelstra made his adjustments. Mike Malone will counter. There was a sense of there wasn't as much urgency and whatnot in the Nuggets play on Sunday. We'll see what happens on Wednesday. Nate Kreckman, Altitude Radio, joining us to talk Nuggets as they head to Miami for Game 3 and their mindset. How are you, my friend?
I'm great, Tony. How you doing, man?
Oh, man, it must be wonderful. A cup championship last year. Nuggets are in the finals. Coach Prime is doing Coach Prime things. Fun times in the Mile High City, my man.
It's a good sports time, man. If we could only get Sean Payton and the Broncos to finally get up to snuff, we'd really have something going.
Right.
You know, we've all given up on the Rockies, but the football could be better. But other than that, man, everything's great.
Right. So your thoughts on Game 2. I've said there's two ways you can look at it. Maybe Miami unlocked something, but at the same time, maybe the Denver Nuggets said, you know what, we didn't really play very well, and we still almost won this thing.
Yeah, they didn't really play very well, and they almost got a victory. And this was in a game where Miami shot 48.6% from three. They made 17 threes in that game. And in these playoffs, teams that shoot 48% or better from downtown are 13-0. Six of those wins belong to the Miami Heat. That's their recipe for being able to win basketball games. And one of the other big recipes was outside of Nikola Jokic, who was brilliant with 41 points, the offensive contributions. We're not stellar all the way around. Jamal Murray only scored 18 points. He did have 10 assists, but MPJ and KCP, they combined for 11 points in this game, which just flat out is not good enough for Denver. So a combination of terrible communication on switches and terrible perimeter defense and just a night where offensively not enough guys really showed up, that's the recipe for how Miami can steal games in this series despite being a prohibitive underdog. And I mean, Tony, you see it, man. The Miami Heat just aren't as good as the Denver Nuggets. There's no reason the Nuggets shouldn't win this series, but if there's a recipe for the Heat, game two is what it looks like.
When you see Nikola Jokic with four assists, how much of that was Miami preventing him from finding people around him, or did he find people around him and they just didn't knock down shots?
There were a few factors in that. I mean, Nikola took 28 shots, which is not a thing that he necessarily does an awful lot of, but also he kept getting advantageous matchups, particularly against Cody Zeller. Plus, Bam Adebayo, as great a defender as he is not up to the task of trying to defend Nikola Jokic down in the post. There were certainly some missed shots in this game that was problematic for Denver. Nikola could have had more assists just from that. And also, you know, a lot of what Miami was doing, they were blitzing Jamal Murray. And they were, I really do think that, and Steve Kerr talked about this on Draymond Green's podcast, and I think it's a great observation, is that that if you can limit Jamal Murray, that really hurts Denver. And instead of trying to throw double teams at Nikola Jokic, they regularly were throwing doubles in Jamal Murray's direction, and it was effective. Now, look, I fully expect Denver to make an adjustment on that. I think they'll look better against that zone defense of Miami's, especially when they stretch it out towards midcourt. But again, it was certainly effective in that game. The four assists, I wouldn't necessarily call it a problem, but I do think that's an adjustment Denver has to make.
Given that the national media isn't always been focused on this Nuggets team, this news about Mike Malone and how he reacted after game two and publicly criticizing the team, is that something he normally does? Is this out of character? How did the team react to it?
It's a regular season tactic that Michael Malone will employ. But, I mean, we know how it goes with basketball coaches, with coaches in general. You know, you only get so many bullets in the chamber, so to speak. And the effort card is not one that Michael Malone has played thus far in the postseason. When really, if you look at Denver's game two effort at home, it looked, quite frankly, like it did against Minnesota, like it did against Phoenix, like it did against the Lakers. It's just that the Nuggets are so good, they overcame some lesser performances and were able to win those games. They didn't in game two. And Michael Malone calling out the effort, I was perfectly fine with it. Number one, because there really were some effort issues in that game. And number two, it's the first time that he has used this in the playoffs, and that's okay. Like, I think that that's a good move. I think he's been very conscious about trying to keep a chip on his team's shoulder. He's tried to keep the us against them, nobody believes in us, nobody respects in us mentality, the chip on the team's shoulder. And after game one, I think that he recognized we didn't give our best effort. Maybe guys are reading their own clippings a little too much. Maybe everyone's getting a little fat and happy. Maybe everyone's listening to how great we are. And he decided to put the screws to his team. And I think it's really got a chance to be able to work. It also helped, Tony, and I tell you this, I don't know if you saw what Jeff Green said after the game, but Uncle Jeff basically echoed exactly what Malone said about effort. Maybe some of the other guys bristled at those comments a little bit. But to have a veteran like Jeff Green and sort of, you know, a part of that veterans council inside that locker room back Michael Malone and echo what he had to say right there, that's the kind of thing that really helps get that point across. So I was fine with it because I thought Malone was dead on.
So this Nuggets team goes into the finals, and they've only lost three times leading into the finals. One, all right, an overtime loss in Minnesota when the Timberwolves back are against the wall. Two games in which Phoenix shoots lights out at home in order to hold off Denver. So could you make the point that that this game, too, is the first time they've really been kind of punched in the face, to use a cliche?
No, not really. Because, again, Miami shot so well. Like, they made 48.6% of their threes. Like, a 49% three-point shooting game is the kind of game that is going to be able to beat Denver. Hell, it's going to beat anybody in the NBA. But, you know, you look up at the end of the night, Denver's offensive rating was still, it was over 120 last night, which is exactly where they want to live. It wasn't as though they didn't have a good offensive game. Now, the pace got mucked down a little bit, and I will say this, Miami, I thought, was able to dictate the pace a little more. There was more of a whistle, there were reviews, the officials, and this isn't why Denver lost, but the officials were dreadful in that game, and it was a herky-jerky kind of in-the-mud game that Miami was able to play with them. And, like, all of these things that I'm saying that went in the Heat's favor, and it was a three-point game. And it was a game where Denver had a 15-point second half lead that they let go. Like, all of those things that went in Miami's favor, and the game was still right there, just Denver wasn't able to finish for a change.
And I get people want to make a series out of this. They really do. They would love to see this go as far as possible. But I can't get over game one. I mean, what I saw was a complete two totally different level teams. I just could not get that out of my head. Even when I was watching Denver blow a 15-point lead in game two, I kept thinking to myself, this is still that team. This is still that team that is, even though Spoelstra made adjustments, I am watching a better basketball team blow a 15-point lead.
Yeah, and there's no doubt about that because, look, this has been kind of one of the themes of these playoffs is, you know, opposing coaches have been able to make good adjustments, you know. Finch in Minnesota, you know, he started guarding Jamal Murray for 94 feet and using Nikhil Alexander-Walker, and that was an adjustment that really bothered Denver. And we saw Phoenix and L.A. sort of pick up on that through the course of the playoffs. We saw Phoenix blitzing Jamal Murray. You know, Spoelstra didn't invent that for game two. We saw the Lakers using Rui Hachimura on Nikola Jokic and letting Anthony Davis operate in space more defensively. And it was an adjustment that basically worked for one quarter. That's the thing about the Nuggets is they're so good, and Jokic in particular is so good. You can make adjustments that can be effective. It's just they all have a very limited, very short expiration date before Denver solves them. And much of what you saw in game two, you know, the Nuggets have 3 days between game two and game three to spend that on film and to get ready for it, to get their head straight. I think you're going to see a much better version of the Denver Nuggets in game three.
All right, I got a minute, but I wanted to ask you real quick, switching gears. Colorado, are they leaving the Big 12? What's the buzz in Boulder?
Well, they already left the Big 12.
I'm sorry, they're going back to the Big 12. My bad. Switch it over.
Big 12, but yes, they want to be in the Big 12, Tony, because the Pac-12 is a nightmare.
It is a nightmare, yes.
Has just been an absolute sieve for them financially. They want to get back to the Big 12. I know you were in town covering them when they made the switch. It was supposed to be a big windfall, and it turns out it was an absolute mess. But, you know, in defense of the situation, Buff didn't help themselves. They lose way too much.
Love you, Nate Kreckman. Thank you so much for joining us, my man. Enjoy the rest of the series.
Tony, you're the man, buddy. Anytime.
You got Nate Kreckman, Altitude Radio, on the Nuggets as they head into Miami for Game 3 Wednesday night.
And Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right. Thanks to Nate Kreckman, Altitude Radio. Nate was one of my favorite people working in Denver. We worked at a station called The Ticket that doesn't exist anymore. And really, really fun times. You know what? Real quick story. So I filled in for his show one time. I had the night show, which was it was on from like 7 to 10. So I did a lot of post-game Avalanche and Nugget stuff. He did 9 to 12. So one day I get a call, can you come in and fill in for Nate? And I'm like, yeah, sure. So I went in and I did the show. And Nate had a thing called dating advice. Like, it was just a fun bit that he did. And I couldn't do dating advice because I hadn't dated anybody in a long time. I was married to my wife for 15 years at that point. And I said, well, I can do marriage advice. I'll do the segment, but I'll just give you a marriage advice. And I told a story about how I lost my I was on a family trip that my wife couldn't go to because of business. So we were with my parents. We're at this amusement park. My wife says to me before we leave on the trip, don't lose the kids. And I was like, how dare you tell me I'm not going to lose my kids. I'm going to lose my kids? They're my kids. Why do you think I'll lose my kids? Sure enough, I lost my son. We lost my son at the amusement park. We needed security to go all over the place to find him. We finally found him. He was like in tears, right? He got separated from our group. I wasn't paying attention because I was talking to my brother and whatnot. But I knew I'd be in trouble. So I decided to tell, I said to the story, I said, so I decided to play a game with my children called Secrets We Keep From Mommy. And I said, my advice is don't play that game. And my wife happened to be in the car going to, not lunch, but like some early meeting. And her and the girl she was with, they got in the car and it was set to the station. And she heard me tell that story. I got caught. So that's how I blew it. So whenever I think about filling in for Nate, I always think about getting caught. It was a perfectly good hide. I mean, I was rolling along. None of my children had told my wife that I lost Chris at the amusement park. But nevertheless, that's what happened. So don't ever have secrets from mommy. Doesn't work that way. Nevertheless, LIV Golf and PGA Tour, I have been just soaking in, is the best way I can put it, the tweets that are coming in from confused golfers who are like, I don't know who I work for today. Yeah. What exactly is this? They have totally been bamboozled by this merger between LIV Golf and the PGA Tour. Here's a couple of tweets. So Phil Mickelson, awesome day today with a smiley face. Brooks Koepka, welfare check on Chambly. Smiley Kaufman with a, what is that? What he's thinking emoji?
Yeah.
Right? Colin Morikawa, I love finding out morning news on Twitter.
that's
true, Colin. That's the best, isn't it? Joel Dahman, who is the star of Full Swing. He's just a kind of a, this is a good one. I've grown up being a fan of the Four Aces. Maybe one day I'll get to play for them on the PGA Tour. Hilarious. That is hilarious.
I'm telling you, man, we can put together a PGA super team.
I know. Michael S. Kim, very curious how many people knew this deal was happening. About 5 to 7 people? Players run organization, right? Yeah, that's the best part of this.
Yes.
How did anybody not know this was coming? How did it not leak?
You can't
keep a secret between 3 people.
I think 5 to 7 is an overestimate.
Right.
I want to say it's 3 people. It was the head of Europe, the head of PGA, and the head of LIV. That was the only 3.
I'm gonna tell you something right now. This is scary. Why do conspiracy theories like 9/11 and JFK and moon landing, why do they ultimately fail? They ultimately fail because one thing they can't get around is people can't keep their mouths shut, right?
Yeah.
So the JFK conspiracy theories, like the Oliver Stone movie, it's like 1,000 people knew they were going to kill the president and not one of them said anything in 40 years, right? Same thing with when people talk about 9/11. They're like, you needed practically an army to get this done and no one said a word. Right, same thing with anything. And these guys did it. They got a deal done and nobody knew anything. Nobody knew anything. That room, whoever was in that room, they will go to the grave with your secret, man, until it's time for you to release. They will keep that story in between their lips and lock it up with a key because none of these guys knew a thing about this. They went to bed last night thinking I'm a member of the PGA Tour, whatever. They woke up this morning and the whole business model is going to change. And they didn't know. Mackenzie Hughes, I don't know who he is. I don't know if he's a LIV golfer or a PGA golfer. Nothing like finding out through Twitter that we're merging with a tour that we said we'd never do that with. Okay, so he's a PGA Tour golfer. Or maybe he's a LIV golfer and he's ticked. Maybe he likes to do his own thing on LIV. I don't know.
Keith Oberman has a tweet. I don't even know if this is accurate, but he says breaking. So the Saudis just bought American Golf.
You know, damn right. Did they? They sounds like they did.
I mean, it sounds like it. They're the chief investor right now in the PGA.
Let me tell you something. Jay Monahan, he better make sure this is the right move. He's going to go down in history as one of the worst commissioners in the history of sports.
Yep.
If he's not careful with this.
I like this one, too. Brooks Koepka is the biggest winner in the PGA Tour LIV merger. He got paid, won a major, he's back on the tour.
Yep. All that stuff. Mike Cannizzaro, our good friend at the New York Post. Phil Mickelson calmly stated from the start of LIV Golf, as the criticism against him and the rest of the LIV players mounted, just let this thing play out, you'll see. Well, it's now played out, and we see what he saw all along. I told you, we talked about this earlier, he's now the hero.
Yep.
He is now back on the pedestal that he had to vacate for 2 years while everyone threw rotten apples at him and yelled shame, shame, shame through the city streets. Mickelson emerged as the guy that said, wait, wait, wait. He really did. He must have known this was inevitable from the very beginning. He must have said, look, guys, I'm buying a lawsuit on the PGA Tour, and I need you to guarantee that we're going to win it. Because I won't sue, but we'll see how they'll react when they can't win that lawsuit. Seriously.
And I'm sitting here, you know, Kyle Porter, who writes for golf, CBS Sports Golf.
Yeah.
Because I'm sure Rory is pleased with the tour rolling him out week after week to fight its battle so that in the end, Phil, Brooks, Bryson, and DJ could walk away with $500 million. And reunification with the league is defended.
Yeah, that's the biggest. That to me is the biggest part of this. That is the biggest part of this. Is that league, that tour? That's what Jay. Oh my God, it's so bad. They made those guys, and they stood by and let those guys stick up for that tour, defend that tour, fight the battle for them. The battle that they didn't have to fight. They could have said, "Look, I play on the PGA Tour, but I don't give a crap about any of this.
I just want to
show up and play." You know, I don't care about politics. I don't care about money. Like, I'm a PGA Tour golfer. Let them fight that out. Just tell me when my tee time is at Colonial. That's all I care about. Right? And they all could have done it. And Rory said, no, no, no. I'll be the popular face of what you stand for. I'll be the popular face of what you guys believe in. Because nobody knows who Jay Monahan is. Nobody would recognize him outside of a PGA Tour podium. But at a restaurant, I wouldn't recognize him. I have no idea who he is. But Rory McIlroy, whenever I walk around the public, whenever I see the public, I will wave the flag. And the PGA Tour was like, thanks, while behind his back, they were merging with the league that they told everybody was immoral. And it's an amazing story. It is an amazing event today. Unbelievable. Seriously, what in the world are they doing? But you know what? I've been a Mickelson fan since he was in college. I've been a Mickelson fan my whole life. Last couple of years were rough because I didn't agree with his assessment. I didn't agree with the way he thought it out. I thought he was ruining his legacy. I was like, is this what we're going to do? I'm like, the guy can still play. And is he now a guy that I catch on with the majors? Because I ain't tuning into the CW to watch any of his golf events. And I couldn't care less if he made a hole-in-one at Adelaide or anything like that. And now I'm watching a guy that I've rooted for a long time become a villain. And now he said, you know what? I'll be the villain because one day I'll be the hero. And take time, but I'll be the hero. I got my family. I got my money. I got this tour. I'll wait it out. But one day you'll all come back and say, oh, I guess he was right the whole time. So
I love it. I love that Phil went from hero to villain to hero.
Yeah.
What a story arc.
What a story arc.
Hollywood can't even write that well.
Fantastic.
I do hope that he still wears all black, though.
I do, too.
Yeah, that's a good look, Phil.
So I guess tomorrow we're going to try to get Ryan Ballingy on to help us out. And then Dan Lust is going to...
We do have Dan Lust locked and loaded for tomorrow.
He's a legal analyst to give us a little breakdown
sports
on this.
Sports law legal analyst.
And, of course, we'll have the NBA Finals. Oh, by the way, I want to shout out to... I wish I could remember her name, but the young lady from Miami Television that shoved that guy.
Yes!
Did you see that video? Got to give a props to her. That is hard to do. To keep your mind on what you're talking about while you're forcibly pushing somebody away
from
you.
Keep that focus.
To stay focused. Well done. I think her last name's Rivera, but she did a great job. Miami Television should be proud of her commitment to her craft by not letting some lunatic fan, Golden Knights fan, ruin her stand-up. piece that she was doing from Vegas covering the Florida Panthers in the Stanley Cup Finals. All right, we'll see you tomorrow. The Lombardi Line's next on Sportsmap Radio.
Joe A. Hi. Joe B.